Welcome back to the ACC. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Broadcasting live from the Real Sports Apparel Store just outside Air Canada Center within Maple Leaf Square, right across the hall from the Real Sports Bar and Grill. The Raptors tonight losing to the New York Knicks, 90-87. Jeremy Lin hitting the three ball with half a second to go in the game to give New York the victory, their sixth in a row, now just one game below 500 and sitting in eighth in the Eastern Conference playoff picture. And they've done it all with Carmelo Anthony sitting on the sidelines and Jeremy Lin being the hero of all six. He started the last five. He didn't start that first one, Jonesy, but came off the bench for 35 minutes and 20-plus against the New Jersey Nets, and now it's a six-game winning streak with Lin going off for 27 points. Stoudemire, though, coming alive in that second half was a massive help as well because he was very quiet in the first half, but it was big in the second half, and that provided more space on the floor for everybody. He scored 13 of his 21 in the second half.
He did a terrific job, you know, in coming back. Normally a guy comes back, he's, you know, a little short. The legs aren't there, and we saw that early, and he caught his stride in the second half. He did a terrific job, and look, give the Knicks credit. They were nowhere near their best game, shooting 41%. They did cut down on the turnovers, though, and it's something that you pointed out, Eric. At halftime, they had 11 turnovers. In the second half, only five miscues, leading to three Toronto points. Toronto, by contrast, 12. How many in the fourth quarter? 10?
They had nine turnovers in the fourth quarter, the Raptors.
And that, you know, that you can't do that. And we've talked about it. Turnovers usually lead to a two-on-one, a three-on-one. Heck, Iman Shumpert picks Calderon's pocket. That's a breakaway dunk. I thought New York did a great job of taking away what Toronto went to, and Toronto didn't find anything else.
416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to Kirk in Mississauga. Go ahead, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Eric, PJ, how you guys doing, man?
Doing well, thanks.
Good, happy Valentine's Day, man. We had a disappointing loss tonight, man. You know, as I heard Chuck D say, it's now Shaolin's Temple, man. Like, this is getting ridiculous right now.
why do you say that, Kirk?
This is the ACC, man. This is not Bankers Life Fieldhouse. This is not the Palace. This is, you know what I mean? This is the ACC we got to talk about. You come and you defend your home court all the way to the end, 48 minutes, you know? You got a guy that's the talk of the league. He gets the last second shot. It's all fine and dandy. But if we can't defend these guys when it comes down to it, what are we doing seven games here for? We don't need seven games here straight. You know what I mean? I thought it was a good game. The main point I find with this coaching problem is that if we got an adjustment on Calderon, they don't want Lin on him no more, they put Shumpert on him, why can't we adjust? You know, we got Barbosa in there. He probably played the whole fourth quarter. We got to give him a little rest. Give AC, bring AC in, give him a little break. Switch it up a little bit so that we got some fresh guys for the end of the game, you know. There was a point in the fourth quarter, maybe in third quarter, we didn't score a point for how long? We keep going, field goal attempt, we're not getting to the line, we're not getting the board, we're turning it over. You don't need that kind of stuff at home. I know, you know what I mean? Like,
I hear you, Kirk. And look, thanks for the call, man. Good to hear you again. That's one of the adjustments that Eric and I talked about. They were attacking Lin early, and then Shumpert told us in the postgame, we both noted it, they started to take that attack away from Calderon by riding him off the screen roll, making him work, wearing him down. Maybe that ball is brought up by Barbosa and then given to Calderon in the front court so he can run the offense. Don't necessarily go strength against strength in that case. You know, I think back into something Johnny Davis and I talked about. In 1977, in the finals, the guards for Philadelphia were really good. So were Portland's guards. So what did they do? They had the Philadelphia 76ers had Caldwell Jones bring the ball up the floor and then hand it to a point guard. So the fact that Shumpert was making it that difficult for Calderon, maybe there is an adjustment to be made there. Maybe somebody else brings it up and gives it to him over center and they work it. Maybe they get the ball to Barbosa quicker in the offense and let him attack Jeremy Lin in screen and roll. He may not be the decision maker, but he sure got more speed and more, you know, more of the ability to break people down on the dribble. So, you know, that to me was something that I really thought Toronto could have done in terms of adjustment. I give Mike D'Antoni credit for that move, putting Shumpert on Calderon, but there's another counter move that has to be made.
416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. The Raptors, again, losing to the Knicks 90-87, and former Raptor, former Knick, Jerome Williams joining us now on our post-game show on the wrap from the Real Sports Bureau, sir.
Where was your allegiance tonight, dog?
Man, I was split down the middle. I was like, hold on, but I'm in Toronto, so you know the Raptor. You know, I was with the Raptor. I was like, hurt when they hit that shot. I'm like, ugh.
Did you think that he was going to pull up for the three after he asked to spread out? It looked like he was going to take it.
No, I knew he was going to pull up for the three. Yeah. Just the way he was measuring it, and he let the clock wind down.
Didn't have enough time to drive it.
Yeah, didn't have enough time to drive it. And he had just taken it to the hole, so he knew, you know, he was going to back up.
Bought him a little more space.
All right, JY, I want to ask you, because you're a D.C. guy. You're a I play in the schoolyard kind of guy.
Yeah, that was schoolyard back.
You're a Georgetown guy. When you see a game like that, and it's scrapping and clawing, and guys are stepping on backs and climbing on people to keep the ball alive, do you not realize that, okay, whistle's in the man's pocket, it's on?
Yeah, get in the fight. Get in the fight.
Were you disappointed that the Raptors didn't bring, quote, more of that fight?
Well, I think by the time they probably realized it was that type of fight, it was too late because New York had already thrown the first two punches.
Well, don't you get up and swing back?
Under normal circumstances, yes, you do.
Okay.
Yes, you do.
Okay.
Yes, you do. Absolutely.
Let's grab another call here while we've got Jerome Williams with us as well. John in North York, go ahead. You're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Yeah, it's interesting. You were talking about the referee's whistle being in his pocket, except for the outrageously bad call on the foul shot, and I think that's what turned the game around at that point. The Raptors suddenly got shy again. Because they were banging it on the boards. I mean, this was like a playoff game. And suddenly there's this ridiculous call on a rebound, on a foul shot rebound that goes the wrong way, and they probably think, oh, God, here we go again.
Thanks for the call. That is a great point. And that was a playoff-type game. I mean, for all the people that love college basketball, no college kid survives in that game tonight. I'm sorry. That's big man's, grown man's basketball.
That's what they paid the big dollars for.
Thank
right
you.
There. That was absolutely playoff basketball, fourth quarter, game seven type atmosphere, standing ovation, you know, standing room only. It was that type of game, and, you know, he stepped up and made plays. Came down, got an and one. Shumpert, big steal, dunk. Three-point shot at the end.
Jonesy touched on this a little bit, Jerome. The Raptors made the switch. The Knicks made the switch on the Raptors with Shumpert guarding Calderon, and it was Barbosa then on Lin for a good chunk of that fourth quarter. What could Toronto have done, if anything, to slow Lin down? Because he was playing well over the course of the night, but he had 12 of his 27 in the fourth. They had no answer for him, like New York found an answer to slow down Jose, who was out playing Lin for a good chunk of the evening up until that fourth.
Well, you know, and I think that just shows his student of the game effect. You know, the first quarter, they really played Lin great, forced him into a lot of turnovers. Even in the second quarter, forced him into a lot of turnovers, trapping him off the ball, the screen and roll. And in the second half, and mainly in the fourth quarter, they kind of backed off of that type of pressure.
Yeah.
They didn't trap as much. They were letting the defense go under and then trying to square him back up. He drove to the lane three or four times, got the foul, you know, took it in there. Dished off to Tyson and Amari for two layups, you know, and then a couple of them just went out of bounds, but he was forcing the issue
right.
Because they stopped trapping.
JY, you're a defensive guy, and that's what I called myself when I played university and college ball. You notice things. Jeremy Lin, he goes to his right hand a lot.
All day.
Right and extreme right.
All day.
Exactly. And as a defensive guy, you play strong to drive, weak to shoot because it's an easier square. So do you not sit on his right hand and say, no, you're going left, and if you're trying to come back right, that's where my help is, on the left, and everybody's on that same page.
Student of the game, Jeremy Lin was forcing Barbosa right at the end of the game when they switched.
Because Barbosa's better going left.
Exactly. Yeah. Clearly was forcing him to the right, and I was saying, how is he able to go in there and drive right? So it is attention to detail. It's attention to detail, and I think that, you know, Dwayne Casey is doing a phenomenal job in terms of just the way he's gotten to the team to this point.
Right.
Where they're in ball games without their leading scorer in Bargnani and without their first-round draft pick. But at the same time, this is where you take the next step. So the next step is just getting on that page, because I see him over there working the sidelines. He's working it. He's telling guys where to be, what to do. Just got to get to that execution point.
Let's take one more with Jerome Williams. I'm sure you got a lot of stuff to do, JYD, so we'll do one more, then we'll step aside. We'll continue with your calls right up to 11 o'clock, folks. Mitch in Toronto, go ahead. You're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, what's up?
What's up, Mitch? Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's a disappointing loss and all, but we have to take heart. I mean, like JYD said, we're playing without our leading scorer. No draft pick this year. I love the fact that the Raptors play defense. I don't know if anyone remembers last year. We were one of the best offensive teams in the league and a terrible defense. Now it's basically the opposite, but defense wins championships. And the offense will come in time. And, you know, I mean, personally, I don't want us to be a middling team that's going to get out or get put out in the first round by a Miami or Chicago. I want us to get one of those top five draft picks next year. So although the loss hurts, I mean, take heart. The team is getting better. And Dwayne Casey is a real coach. And that's something we haven't had here in a long time. No disrespect to Triano, the former coaches. I mean, but when it comes down to it, like, he's championship pedigree, and it's showing in the way that we're playing. Like, he's turned around our defense in 1 year.
All right, Mitch, appreciate the phone call. Jerome, just quickly here. You're in the locker room. You know what you have and what you don't, and you know the way that it's probably going to help improve. But how do you, because we talk about this all the time, we try to tell people that are part of like the whole Tank Nation, you can't walk in the locker room and you know, go back a few years and tell Jerome Williams, we're going to play hard, but you know, if you happen to lose, don't worry about it, because we want to get a top five pick. You want to be in the postseason for your own record, for your own win-loss record, let alone the rest of your teammates and your coach and everything else. I mean, how do you play through that, knowing that you might not have the most talent, but you're playing your ass off every night in spite of that, and trying to get yourself in a position to still be in the postseason and not worry about Anthony Davis or Jared Sullinger or anybody else?
Hey, well, you know what? You got it. You have pride as a player. You're getting paid to win. You're not getting paid to throw in a towel. You're not getting paid to come out there and flop games. And I don't have that sense about the Raptors. They're out there trying to win basketball games. First of all, when I look at this stat sheet, one of the hugest numbers that jumped out at me from a defensive standpoint, you say, where are we improving? 11 blocks.
Yeah,
41%
shooting. Yeah.
That right there is already shoring up a major, you know, debacle that we were talking about last year. Mm-hmm. You got to have that interior presence. Ed Davis, Amir Johnson, they're blocking shots down there. Amir had 5 blocks to Tyson Chandler's 2, and Tyson – everybody knows his pedigree and what he's done in the league in terms of being a quote-unquote defensive player of the year candidate.
Right.
So when you have guys, especially young players, that are willing to now step up and protect that paint, now you have a foundation to build on. Because when you start to get those perimeter guys defending and really knowing what they have in the back, it's going to get the results are going to get a lot better.
Appreciate you coming by and taking some calls with us and chipping in on our post-game show. We'll be seeing you around hopefully soon.
Absolutely.
Good to see you, man.
Shout out to the pound.
There is Jerome Williams, the Junkyard Dog. We'll continue with your calls till 11 o'clock. It's The Wrap on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to The Wrap on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Paul Jones, Eric Smith with you here till 11 o'clock, taking your phone calls at 416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. The Knicks beating the Raptors 90-87. New York pretty much behind all night. They held 2 separate 1-point leads in the first 5 minutes of the game, then trailed by 17 at one point, by double figures most of the evening. They were down by 9 with under 5 minutes to go and came back on a 10-1 run to tie the game and then win the game. Their largest lead of the game was the final score.
Yep.
90-87, Knicks beating the Raptors on the Jeremy Lin three ball with half a second remaining.
There was a point, Eric, in the third quarter when Toronto had a 10-point lead. And remember, we said on the broadcast, we got a game here. And even though we pointed out the numbers, New York was, you could sense from them that they were willing to play that hard to get back into it. Throw the stats out the window, because all the stats say Toronto should have won this game,
yeah,
except for the turnovers in the fourth quarter. But New York was willing to play hard, willing to sacrifice and make those plays, those multiple effort plays. Not that Toronto didn't get them, but New York had more of them. I mean, there's one point where Amir Johnson had, what, two blocks on one possession that looked like sheer dunks for, I don't know if it was Stoudemire or Chandler.
Stoudemire.
And then they got DeRozan with a foul down there. Hey, you've got to push that next guy out and be in position to get the ball, not be in a position to be called for a foul. And that's what I mean when I talk about realizing the way the game goes and you're going to scratch and claw for it.
Back to the calls we go. Joe in Toronto, go ahead. You're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Go ahead, Joe.
I have one high and one low for the game for tonight. I think the high was the Raptors play really gritty and really tough. It's a shame that they lost the game. And my low was the fans at the end of the game there. It looked like I was in Madison Square Garden for the last 2 minutes of the game. What are your thoughts on that?
All right, Joe, appreciate the phone call. I'll tell you what, I hear you on the high, and as for the low, I will admit right off the bat that I'm a little bit on the fence in one regard. And the reason I say that is this. The Raptors, sitting now at 9-21 with their star player out and their top draft pick still overseas, hey, the other guys are working hard, they're playing hard, Jonesy, but I don't know that they're necessarily a gate draw unless you are a hardcore hoop fan, a diehard Raptor fan that doesn't matter who's in uniform, you just love the Raptors and you're going to support them either way. So I can see where the competition brings in fans. Celtics Friday,
sure.
Lakers Sunday,
sure.
Knicks, the historical type franchises. Now add on top of that the, and it's not fair to call them the flavor of the month, the story of the league in Jeremy Lin over the last five and now six games. Then you factor in the multicultural city. You factor in a heavy Asian population and that how that all ties in to going into the game tonight. Then it's very easy to see where I think you could have the potential for more Nick, or at the very least, more Lin fans,
right,
in attendance. And it almost felt as if it was like those games that we played in London last year where the Raptors went up against the New Jersey Nets, where you had basketball fans in attendance and none were really kind of aligned with the Nets or the Raptors. They were just basketball fans.
Bingo.
That wanted to see a good game.
And you had and to tonight, recruit them to your side,
yeah,
with your play.
And tonight, yeah, I think there were a lot of basketball fans in attendance who were prepared to cheer either way, wanted to see a good game, wanted to see the Raptors, but wanted to see this Lin kid, wanted to see Stoudemire back, wanted to see the Knicks who they grew up watching. Whatever the angle was,
yeah,
they wanted a good game, and I think they got it. I could be wrong, but I would guess if Jose Calderon pulled up on Jeremy Lin at the end and hit a three ball to give the Raptors the three-point lead with half a second to go, there would have been just as many cheers and there would have been just as many people yelling and screaming and going bananas as there was for Lin. I might be wrong, but that's the sense I got from the way it was going tonight. Because even at one point, the place was booing Jeremy Lin in the second quarter. So the motion was riding back and forth all evening.
I'd agree with that. Look, if you're a hardcore Toronto fan, and it sounds like our caller was, you're upset. You're upset that they come into your house and, you know, their fans have come in and used your kitchen and just left a mess and walked out.
Yeah.
You're upset. And I, if I was a hardcore Raptor fan like that, yeah, sure, I could see where they would be upset.
416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, star 590 on your side. Lee in Toronto. Go ahead, you're on Sportsnet 590.
How you doing, Lee? I got just a few
really quick points. First of all, Lynn was incredible in the second half, okay? Second of all, I thought the Raptors were played great, but like their effort was off the charts, but they don't have the horses for a game like that, especially without Bargnani, where it's really tough to get inside scoring, right? Now, as far as the Shumpert thing go, I was wondering during the game, why don't they bring Jamal Magloire out there to bang around? Like they, you know, like they had a guy, they had Shumpert, and every time they'd pick him, they'd have somebody like Stoudemire or Chandler on the other side of the pick so that he, you know, Calderon had to go around two bodies, and he just had nowhere to go, and he couldn't get open. I know they tried to put Barbosa to attack Lynn, but then he'd get inside, and you had all these bodies inside, whereas Calderon, he'd just pop off the screen and just take a shot and make it, and then he couldn't do that in the fourth quarter. So I was wondering what you think about that, about having Jamal in there.
Thanks for the call. Could have been a possibility. I think you need to set hard screens, but then again, New York, you know, their screen roll coverage is such that you've got Chandler or you've got Stoudemire showing from the other side of the screen, and he's out there in a stance, active and ready to play. That's tough to get around because we are starting to see that, or we're starting to see that from Bargnani. When a seven-footer jumps out there and he's in a stance and he's waiting for you, yeah, it makes the guard have to go way out and around. In the first half of the game, Jeremy Lin was getting hung up on those screens, and the coverage was back, and Calderon was taking advantage and making those shots. They changed their coverage. You need to, A, set a better screen, get the ball off to the wing, and have more of an isolation type thing when you play screen and roll. If they jump out like that, throw it to the guy in the corner. That way somebody has to rotate out. You put the defense in rotation. It's very tough in the middle of the floor or from the high screen and roll because with so much space going towards the baseline, people can still pack the paint and then recover out to shooters. So, look, give New York's defense credit. They did a nice job with that. They did a good job. And I think Jose got worn down a bit by having to bring the ball up against the pressure. Shumpert told us, bigger body, stronger body, did the job in wearing him down. That steal that he got in the fourth quarter was not an isolated steal. That was the result of picking him up, playing him tough, working him, wearing him down, sizing everything up, and then knowing at the right time. Yep. And when did he go with it, Eric? Late in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
He probably could have got that at an earlier time. And again, I'll say this. I know this is a defensive guy. When you see something and know you can use it once,
don't waste it early.
Yep. Don't use it early. Don't waste it in the third quarter. Wait till it's money time and you really need it.
Samuel in Scarborough. Go ahead. You're on the fan.
Hey, just watched the whole game. First time seeing Lynn. Very, very good player and all that. I think if Bayless was in the game, he would have certainly had a change in style and would have been able to get up into him a lot better. But my thing was DeRozan. I understand the team's rebuilding. You got to get the young player reps. But you guys know, being around the league for a long time, when you get a young player who develops, especially at the 2-3 spot, the lights turn on a lot quicker than what it is for him. And he's shown a good first step, but the lack of burst on the final move to the basket, getting it stripped, like Bill Walker or things like that, it's just sort of, whether it's a lack of strength or a lack of recognition of what's happening around him, I just don't see him developing into any kind of long-term fit, even though he's 22, 23, whatever, however young he might be. I think James Johnson is doing a solid job of maybe solidifying that three spot. And surprisingly, we're not sometimes seeing him late in the game. Some of that is foul trouble, but I think some of that is because they know that he can help them win games. And DeRozan seems to be a position where he's in flux and you don't know what he's going to be doing long term. I just don't think he's a long term fit for the team.
All right, Samuel, appreciate the
thanks
phone
for
call.
The call. Think, Samuel, I'll say this.
I mean, tonight they could have used James Johnson big time.
I would say, to your point on DeRozan, I think it's maturity and recognition. He certainly has the athleticism. We've talked about it. He's got to tighten up his handle. He's got to, work on his ball handling and his breakdown moves. But at least two occasions tonight, we saw him drive to the hole and expose the ball. You can't expose the ball. If you're driving, that ball's got to go on your right hip, and you've got to hold it like a football. cradle it with two hands when you're going through the traffic. And when you come up for air, that's when the ball comes up. Twice tonight, he drove the lane. He did the right thing at key times, but the ball was stripped. And that's in the recognition and execution, not for effort. And you talk about the light going on. These are things that will help turn the light on for DeMar DeRozan.
Well, you think about the Raptors, and we talked about it with Jerome Williams, with Barbosa getting in there and Lynn forcing him to his weaker side, in a sense, by forcing him left a lot of the time. Three turnovers in the fourth quarter for Barbosa, three turnovers in the fourth quarter for DeRozan. That's six of the team's nine right there from the guys that were at least attempting to get to the hoop the most, but yet coughing it up the most. We'll continue with your calls right up till 11 o'clock. We're going to get some reaction from the locker room coming up as well. Zach Cooper was down there getting some words from the Raptors locker room as they fell apart in the fourth quarter and ultimately lost by 90-87 to the New York Knicks. It's the Wrap on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to the Wrap on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Paul Jones, Eric Smith with you. We're going to get back to your calls in a couple of moments here, folks. We are on the air till 11 o'clock, but we want to get some reaction from the locker room. Zach Cooper of The Fan was down there chatting with some of the Raptors. So, again, stay in line. We're going to ride it right until 11 o'clock and get some of you on the air. But there was a lot of discussion. One of our callers brought it up as well, Jonesy, about the crowd and the fact that at many times, even the end of the game with the big shot, they were kind of pro-Nick, pro-Lynn. I gave my two cents on it. I think you kind of agreed that it was more just people looking for a good game and kind of buying into the hype. But I'm sure, Zach, it was a bit of an issue for the hometown team as well, where maybe they felt that they were not getting their due to some extent.
I can see where, like I said, the team or hardcore Raptor fans would be upset by that. But at the same time, hey, if I pay my money and I'm an Orlando fan and the game's in Detroit and I'm an Orlando fan and my team is playing there, then I'm going to cheer for who I want. Like, that's, you know, they pay their money as long as it doesn't get personal and they're not, you know, riding people from a personal standpoint. Then
well,
knock yourself out.
Is that what the Raptors felt there, Zach?
Well, for the most part, everyone was actually relatively PC about the whole situation. We talked to a few guys, a lot of guys, I think, you know, either ducked out earlier or they were getting treatment. We didn't have access to everyone we wanted to speak with. I wanted to talk to Amir because he's generally pretty open about his feelings. But Jose and DeMar both kind of laid low on the idea. But when we spoke to Ed at Davis, he was probably the one guy who showed a little bit more. And I was asking him, you know, how he feels as a player, you know, playing for these fans who have actually been, you know, very solid considering the way the season has gone for the most part, pouring out in droves. But tonight, when you hear them going as crazy as they were for a visiting team to hit the game-winning shot at the buzzer, I mean, I was curious how he felt, and basically he sums it up in a way where he kind of took it to heart.
Hear from Ed Davis in a couple of seconds. I think we might have had a little miscommunication with the boys back at Raptor Central. So if we can get that fired up and ready to rock, guys, we're going to be hearing from Ed Davis in just a couple of moments. You can yell at us down the line maybe when you've got it ready to roll. But Ed Davis tonight finishing the ball game with 4 points, a couple of rebounds in just under a hair, under 1 second, under 20 minutes of action. So statistically not doing a ton of damage. You'd have a couple of block shots in the ball game. And again, here is Ed Davis.
What do you make of a kid?
Made a tough shot down the stretch of his clutch, and then things are going his way tonight.
How difficult is it? You know, you guys are, you know, on Sunday a few days ago, you guys come back from a big deficit. This time you guys give it away. I mean, right. How do you weigh that?
It's tough, man. You have two playoff teams coming here. We had a good chance to win, especially tonight, and just give it away down the stretch is tough, man. But we're going to bounce back tomorrow. We'll be all right.
Have you followed the story of Jeremy Lin?
I know about it, you know. He got cut from Houston, second round pick while he was undrafted, something, you know. So.
And then he just comes. I mean, that's got to take some balls to come down the stretch as 14 seconds, just kill the clock and take a three.
I mean, not really. I mean, he know the ball was going to be in his hands. Tie game, miss it, going to OT, so. You know, he had a tough shot, you know. It is what it is.
Does it affect you at all when you hear, you know, the the visitor hit a game-winning shot and the crowd explodes?
Not really. Starting lineup, you know, the crowd was louder for him than it was for our star player. So we knew that that's what it was going to be. So, I mean, that's just what it is, you know. Like you said, they cheered louder for Jeremy than they did for DeMar. So he knew it was going to be like that.
How does that make you feel?
I mean, it's kind of disappointing, man, when your home crowd cheers for the opposing player more than they do for the home team. It is disappointing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good luck tomorrow. All right. Thank you.
There's Ed Davis of the Toronto Raptors. So saying it's disappointing, and I think the one thing, and clearly I get it, I understand, and I'm sure you probably echo this, Jonesy, but right now, with due respect to DeMar, in spite of a solid second half to the season that he had last year, he's kind of struggled. We just heard it from a couple of callers already in the show. He is, in theory, and to his teammates, I guess, the star, but he's not playing at that same level that even for six games Jeremy Lin now has. So it's not the same, but I'm sure within the locker room it is, because that's the way maybe they just see it on paper.
Yeah, look, I hear what Ed Davis said about the crowd and the way they reacted, and I can understand that. I mean, same thing. Like I said, you look at it and you say, well, wait a minute, this is our joint. I know it's a storied franchise in New York, but at the same time, you would hope that the majority of the people that have come to the game are there to cheer for the home team. Like I said, I don't have a problem with it in that, hey, guys pay their money. They can, you know, they can cheer for whoever they like, but, you know, the players expect that, you know, we talk about home court crowd, home court support. You would hope as a player that you would have, you know, the majority of the fans cheering for you as the home team.
416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Thanks again to Zach Cooper, who's down in the Raptors locker room. We just heard from Ed Davis. You can hear more from some of the Raptors over the course of the evening, not only on the shows throughout the night, but on the 20 sports updates as well. And you'll be hearing from a lot of players, I'm sure, rolling into tomorrow, as Jeremy Lin will still be the topic du jour for the next 24 hours. Well, maybe a little bit less, as the San Antonio Spurs roll into town on the back-to-back, the very rare home back-to-back, tomorrow evening. Mike in Brampton, go ahead. You're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, Mike.
Good. Okay, I was initially going to talk about DeMar and James Johnson, but I want to talk about that funny soundbite right there by Ed Davis, because I really think it's a non-story. With all the bad teams around the league, if you're 9-21, you're going to get those sellout crowds when you have the Knicks, the Lakers, and the Heat. You're going to get the sellout crowds and those extra people cheering for the other teams or other players. If the Raptors were a top four team, you wouldn't have that. You would have 18,000 cheering for the Raptors. That's just the way it is when you're a bottom five team in the NBA. This isn't specific to Toronto. This happens with all the bad teams. Like, look at the Bulls the other night when they were playing in Milwaukee. You had 80% of that arena cheering for Chicago. It happens when you're a bad team. Now, the other point I wanted to make quickly is, you guys made a good point about the Knicks made some key moves in the fourth quarter there to shore up the defense. They bring in Shumpert, and he locks up Calderon, and clearly he's taking him off his game. And that really, I feel like, was a turning point, you know, because Calderon was really getting his game off tonight. And you guys made a good point that the Raptors had a counter move to make right there, and they didn't do it. And I feel like that counter move was James Johnson, who was sitting on the bench, I believe, that entire fourth quarter. I believe is your best defender, your most versatile defender, a guy who can create havoc and mayhem on the ball. And I think really a missed opportunity when he's sitting on the bench, when you look at the five guys they had on the floor to close out the game. Have a good night, fellas.
All right, thanks for the call. James Johnson did have five fouls. Now, I'm not saying that you save him, because he still had five at the end of the game, but in the flow of the game, at that time, do you put him in? And that's a coaching decision. I you know, you can look back and second guess that, but they needed a rebound. They needed to execute on offense, and might James Johnson have helped that? Yeah, but at the same time, you know, they had Barbosa out there trying to get him the ball to attack Lynn. Calderon's your point man bringing the ball up. You know, DeRozan's out there. Hey, maybe that's the one of those, or, you know, either DeRozan or Barbosa, maybe you substitute James Johnson for one of those guys. But at some point, defense, yes, but you need a guy that's going to be able to score for you on the other end. And that's where they're at right now. The Raptors, Dwayne Casey just doesn't have all the bullets and doesn't have the right equipment all the time. And look, they didn't have their leading scorer either. That's the other thing. They beat New York last time with Bargnani. Very different this time without Bargnani, without Bayless, a couple guys that had been playing well for them before they got injured.
416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. We're going to let you hear from Jeremy Lin before the end of the show. We'll get a couple of comments on the air for you. But right now, Vic in Milton, go ahead. You're on Sportsnet 590,
hey,
The Fan.
Good evening, gentlemen. Two nights in a row, but I'm loving this, man. This is great. I'm singing that Tang tune, it sounds like Sweet Georgie Brown. But listen, you know, Paul, you were talking before about putting yourself in a position to take a foul. Yeah, it doesn't matter where you're on the floor. You know, sometimes foul just happens. And you were talking about the game turned into a scrap. Well, the thing is, you said 13 times to the stripes for New York and 3 times for us. So obviously somebody was getting calls. But it doesn't really matter. I mean, because this is a nice stylish loss. We kind of, this franchise, I don't know, you guys have been watching as long as I have. I think we lead the league in stylish losses. We just seem to play into the narrative all the time in terms of losing in the last minute, but also the star player from the other team coming in and beat us in the last minute. So, and my last point, you know, you guys were saying about, you know, you got to change the culture and you do that with effort and defense. You know, you don't give a dog a treat every time he sits down, because when he's a puppy, you give him the treat. But effort and defense, the effort you put into defense should happen instantly when you're professional. So I think, you know, how many pounds of effort does it take to make 1 ounce of talent? We don't have the talent. We need to draft a superstar. So I'm going to be on that all year, man. We need,
hey, Vic,
we need
the talent. And I hear you. And Eric and I looked at it. Go back and look at the last 5 or 6 drafts. There aren't very many franchise-changing guys. Okay, there are good players. Like, you look at Durant, that draft. Oden got hurt. After Durant, number 3 was Horford. Good player? I wouldn't consider him a franchise player. A good piece as part of a good team, but it's the other things that come with it. And I would hate for people to fall into the trap of thinking you're drafting a Kevin Durant or a LeBron James. You don't know. You might, but you can't bank on that. It's like saying, well, I'm going to beat the other guy I'm playing against because I'm going to be in better shape. No, no, no. That's the baseline. That you have to expect that everybody's going to be in shape. You expect that you're going to get a good player, but you can't bank on drafting a guy that's going to turn your franchise around. You're going to get a good pick, but it can't be in isolation. There are other moves that have to be made. Mike Conley was the next guy drafted after Horford. For a couple of years, it was sketchy. It cost Mark Ivoroni his job because he thought this kid could play, and he got hurt and he couldn't play. And 5 years later, now he's a heck of a player. But the patience and the other moves have to come into it as well.
All right, let's hear quickly from Jeremy Lin. If we're able to, guys, do we have one ready to go to hear from him? Okay, we're going to hear from Jeremy Lin right now. Just one comment from the youngster, 27 points, 11 assists, and the game-winning shot.
Well, I'm just glad we actually had an opportunity for us to be tied at the end of the game just because we came out a little flat. I let Calderon have probably 20 in the first half. I know my percentage is low, but, you know, I got a shooting coach this summer, and he helped me a ton with my shot, and so I'm not going to stop shooting if I think it's a good shot.
There is Jeremy Lin of the New York Knicks and the Knickerbockers with 2 brief 1-point leads in the first quarter, then trailed all night for the most part by double figures for most of the evening, only to come back and win the game at essentially the buzzer with half a second to go in the game. Lin hitting a 3-ball. That is the largest lead of the game, and it is the final margin, 90-87. The Knicks winning their 6th in a row. The Raptors in action again tomorrow on the back-to-back, the home back-to-back, as they will host the San Antonio Spurs. We'll have the call at 7 o'clock, Smith and Jones, and we'll be right back here taking your calls on the Rap till 11 o'clock as well. For the crew back at Raptor Central and down here at the ACC, much thanks, folks. Thanks for calling and listening to the Rap on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.